Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and let it shine. What am I talking about? Well, let's refract on that for a second. Sure, you light up my life, and you're pretty bright, but don't flip my switch, because I'll blow. Anyway, I've got a pack, but not too much. I'm traveling light. Joining us today are the usual people who turned me on, including... Kevin Bulbous Jager.
Bulbous?
I mean, I get it, so that's fine.
Kimberly, our bright idea game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Thank you.
If she gets bright idea and I get bulbous.
It tracks.
Yeah, it's fine.
And with us today is our first lighting designer.
What?
That we've ever met.
Ever.
I just thought that the theaters came that way. You may have seen his New York work in things like The Bad Years, A Dog Story, Afterglow, Red Roses, Green Gold. We are the Tigers and Caesar and Cleopatra. Let's give a big, broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Jamie Roddery. You all ready for this?
It's faster today.
Yeah, I went for it. I was like feeling the excitement.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I feel honored to be your first lighting designer.
Yeah, cheers to that.
Thank you.
Cheers. Here I come.
What a lighting designer he is.
Yes.
But before we get into lighting, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking? That took you a while to join us.
Well, because I have wine in my hand, and so I would like, I took a sip, and then I couldn't
that's
just
really
like...
That's good.
Yeah, because it was good and I was enjoying it.
Yeah, you want to let it settle on the tongue.
So, Brian's office had a random open bottle of wine that Kevin and I are enjoying.
Yeah.
Casiero del Diablo.
That's exactly how you say it.
How are you going to say it?
Casiero del Diablo.
Wow.
I think you have a future.
You just say it sexy like. It's a Malbec, guys, and it's really good. Brian, what are you drinking?
I am drinking the Montelobos Mezcal.
Ooh.
And with a little bit of seltzer and some ice.
Nice. Oh. Yeah. And you, Jamie?
I'm also on that bandwagon, the Montelobos Mezcal.
It's so good, right?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
It's my favorite bottle for an alcohol I don't enjoy.
Not
because I don't enjoy this brand. It's because I don't enjoy mezcal as a whole.
Sure.
We can't get Kimberly to drink any of these like mezcal margaritas or anything. She doesn't play with us.
I mean,
why would a margarita want to be a barbecue?
She don't like smoky.
I mean, some of the gin bottles that we've come through here are gorgeous, but I just don't like what's inside.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. I'll take this bottle when it's done.
You don't like the barbecue. You don't like juniper berries.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He doesn't like Christmas.
No.
Au contraire.
Don't put that opinion on me. let's get started with you.
Yeah.
When did you figure out that it was the lighting aspect of theater that was your way of creating?
So I had a very interesting childhood where I had an opportunity to grow up really in the theater. All four of my parents are in the business.
Cool.
I spent most of my youth either backstage of Broadway shows or at different theaters around the country where my family were all working. So
sure.
I was exposed to it constantly from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that I always was attracted to. And it was less the visual imagery that the light created and more so how it moved a piece moment to moment and the lighting changes and when they would happen, whether if it's storytelling driven or musically driven. And that from a very young age is what I was always attracted to. And I knew pretty early on that it's what I wanted to do with my life.
Mm-hmm. Is there a moment or a show specifically or, you know, that kind of, you know, there are a lot of
light puns there, but
right. I'm just going to go with, you know, that kind of...
Flip the switch?
Yeah, shone a light. Whatever you want to go, yeah.
I think there was...
That was good. The three months? I like that.
Yeah.
We don't care about your answer. We're just part of
I think there was a few that really stood out. I think it's hard to pinpoint it on one exact experience. But the two that stand out here in New York are... my father was in a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, the Nathan Lane revival.
Sure.
And we had this amazing, amazing stage manager named Artie Gaffin.
Yeah, didn't he just pass away?
Just passed away, yes.
Yeah.
And I would spend weekends with my dad, so I was brought to the St. James every weekend, and I would sit in front of Artie in one stage left in the St. James and listen to him call the show multiple shows a weekend. Wow. So I was just given this opportunity to, at that level, hear a production stage manager calling all the light cues.
That's incredible.
That's so cool.
When I was,
how old were you?
Probably around 7.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
And you were behaved?
Yeah.
Did he let you call any?
I don't know. Not that I remember, but there are some other wacky stories.
But, like, if someone makes a movie of
days.
Your life, he, like, puts the headphones on you for a minute, and you call,
for
like,
sure.
cue number one.
Yep. Totally.
The other one is being, the other really standout memory is being up in the catwalks of Madison Square Garden, the theater at Madison Square Garden, for Christmas Carol.
Sure.
Which was just such a spectacle. And, you know... Jules and Peggy's lighting for it was it was so incredible. And I think that was one of those young experiences that impacted me. And the other one was now the theater that goes by the Sharon Playhouse was where I would spend most of my summers.
Okay.
That theater, I was constantly helping, you know, even when I was very young, helping with the lighting. So growing up, actively participating and sitting with the designers that rolled through there was the other probably big influence on me.
Cool.
That's crazy.
Let's flash forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Flash.
just keep them going.
Yeah. What do you, when you get a script,
yeah.
what are you looking for specifically? Not necessarily what you were trained to look for, but like what always stands out lighting-wise to you, aside from inside, outside, day, night?
Yeah, I think what it stands out to me is like how I can help move it along, you know, how I can move it moment to moment. So what, and it depends on the type of show.
Sure.
You know, if it's a musical, I'm generally listening to the music and finding, you know, how to propel this objective and where we are in this script and what's the driving force of this song happening. Is it an outward song or is it an internal monologue and conveying those sorts of things?
Mm-hmm.
With plays, I try to light plays, yes, environmental to a degree because we have to help create the environment we're in, but I also like to let character drive a lot of my lighting. I'm going to light certain characters a different way to help inform the audience about how to feel about that person or thing.
Do you think in also terms of diegetic and non-diegetic lighting?
I don't know what that means.
Yes.
It's because Brian wants to explain it to you.
No, no. One is like it's in the action in their world. The other one, it's not in their world. So like the songs of Cabaret are in the world of Cabaret, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that'll certainly very much inform how it's being lit.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Well, I'm going to brag on Jamie for a minute because I was incredibly fortunate enough to have Jamie light a piece that I had written, my musical in the New York Musical Theater Festival in 2015. Jamie was the amazing lighting designer. And the show was called...
there was another bad lighting designer.
But he was
one.
The amazing one. No, and there was the whole piece was about a woman who had gone through cancer. And in order to kind of like not just count all the terrible things that were happening to her, she counted every sunrise she got to see in the morning. And I remember the first day that we had like an actual designer meeting about what we were going to do with the show. And Jamie had read the script and had come up with this idea that he was going to light it. So it was like a sunrise starting from beginning to end and going through. And it was just like everything that he ended up doing was so powerful that we never would have thought of like looking at the page and everything. But it was such a ridiculous elevation to the emotion of the story.
Yeah, and it's a show I would love to see happen again because I would love to be able to take that idea to sort of the next level and expand on it in a more real world sense.
Did Kevin get on it?
I know.
Then sort of I adore Nymph, but the limitations of the festival situation, I'd love to be able to expand on that more someday.
But that's so brilliant to like think about things in that way and like to use like the Sondheim, Sunday in the Park with George, like in color and light, like. Yeah. The way that you see things is really, really fascinating. Is there a show that you have never designed that is like on your bucket list of like, God, I would love to do that one?
Well, I would first say that I love new works. So those are the things I'm most passionate about. So the thing I want to design is probably not yet written. That being said, I know that's like a boring answer. So let's go for let's go for the not boring answer. I've never designed chess, and chess is such a guilty pleasure of mine.
Sure.
That would be super awesome.
I would love to see a revival of Star Mites. And love to light it. And I feel like this is another one. I feel like all of the movies that I have such nostalgia for from my childhood are all like kind of already happening right now, and I'm not in the place in my career to get on those. Like Anastasia's already happening, Almost Famous is happening right now.
Yeah.
But and I listened to some of your other podcasts, so I know I'm gonna bring up a bit of a sore subject here. But I think the one movie that's left that I'm like, oh please let me be the designer, That Thing You Do.
Yes.
I mean, just from the title card alone,
Oh,
just such bright 60s moments.
Yeah, I will say so this. If you designed that show, I would go and see it. And I would definitely enjoy it.
But also, like, you get to design a concert and then also, like, just a hotel room.
Yeah, so fun. So fun.
Do you... So the great segue to my next question.
Sorry, I'm forgetting his name now, but I just want to be in the room with that writer because he was also the bass player and songwriter for Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, oh, right.
Yeah.
Because, so, you know, he'd write some new songs.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, or just Fountains of Wayne. It's a jukebox musical.
Or it's just That Thing You Do with, like, 90 reprises, and that's all it is.
It's sort of the movie.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters is, like, a 15-minute dance piece.
That has to open act two.
Yes, it does.
Beach, classic.
That is a
beach
Casey Nicholaw dance number if ever I've seen one.
There will be sand. It'll be Once on This Island.
Yes.
End of Act One is, like, them, like, there's, like... The foundation starting to shake, and then beginning of Act 2 is Shrimp Shack Shooters, and like, you know, the Steve Zahn character's enjoying it, and then the main songwriter's like, what the hell are we doing here? And Shay just like sitting there being Shades. I love it. I'm in.
Yeah, who do we cast?
Why do I feel like we've done this before, or did I see it on Twitter?
No,
well,
I thought it was on Twitter, I think.
We would
John Groff as Shades.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could go with that.
I could also see Riddle. John Riddle. Is that his name? John Riddle?
That's in Frozen right now?
From Frozen, and he's going to be in...
Almost Famous?
No.
He's in as Raoul right now.
Oh, and Phantom.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can see
him.
Like, he's more tall and lanky.
Lanky. He has the comedic chops, but like that part doesn't have to be like outrageously
funny.
Oh,
the lead singer is 100%... who was just playing Dill in To Kill a Mockingbird that left?
Gideon Glick.
Gideon Glick is absolutely the I quit kid.
Was he Dill or Jem?
He was Dill.
Okay.
Who is based on Truman Capote.
Yes.
Anyway, let's make it happen, everybody.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so into that.
Into it. Jessica Vosk is a Liv Tyler character.
Ooh. I really like that. Oh my God, why don't we do this right now?
See, Kevin's on board now. Sing Street's coming.
Yeah, Sing Street's coming. They're basically making all the movies that we have watched and talked about.
Well, then let's choose another one.
Yeah, I know we should pick what's next.
We just needed a Chorus Line revival.
I know.
Amen.
What kind of scenes do you prefer? Do you like lighting those like big scenes or something more intimate or something completely different?
I think the majority of my career, where I find most of my success at least, is two very different extremes.
Okay.
the very, very contemporary, flashy musical, and plays that are a little bit outside of the box of a typical play. And sure. I would reference for myself, Red Roses, Green Gold.
Sure.
It was a huge rock musical with the music of the Grateful Dead, and I think that is sort of where one
when
of my
you had those green lights that went every
there
time.
There's a lot of silly tricks in that one, and it's just big and in your face, and it's a concert, and it's flashy, and it's fun. We also did some. I was very pleased with how we ended up lighting those scenes as well.
Cool.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, something like The Woodsman, which is a very unconventional play and puppet show, and. Lit very, very dimly and in a way I wouldn't normally approach it.
And what's that experience like lighting? Because, like, those of you, we've talked about The Woodsman before, we've had some people on. You can watch it on Broadway HD. What was that like, the experience of, like, lighting a show that was so puppet-based? Like, did that change, like, how you design based on, like, it not being humans that you were focused on?
Yeah, a little bit, because I, you know, in that show, we never wanted to hide the people. Right, but we did want to make sure the puppets were where the focus was, and that it became a game of watching the puppet, making sure that was the sort of where most of the attention was. But we never wanted to lose the puppeteers too much into the background, and also that show is lit very, very sort of dimly and shadowy and. To make the audience sort of like lean forward and force to watch, because if we made it too bright or too obvious, it's just like now it's an actor holding a stick, and like I am presenting that actor holding the stick. Yeah. But by making it a little more obscure and forcing you to lean forward and forcing you to look, it just became the stick. You're looking for the stick, and you just becomes just the world.
And now a lot of shows...
Is that your mantra, become the stick?
It is now.
Yeah.
A lot of shows we're starting to see are being filmed and then presented to us in, like, the medium of television.
Sure.
Through, like, either Broadway HD or, like American Sun is about to be released on November 1st on... or it has been released on November 1st on Netflix. So how does your design aesthetic or, like, what you did with the show change when they suddenly tell you, hey, we're putting cameras now? So, do you have to adjust a lot?
It does. And it does have to adjust. And it depends on the show how much adjustment is necessary. The Woodsman was a big one. And it's basically what happens is the human eye is amazing at seeing light and dark at the same time. And the camera can only kind of see one intensity or things in the area around that intensity. So you end up just crushing everything. So your brights and your dark, your highlights and your shadows are all around the same area now. And the Woodsman was so dim, with just everything had to be raised. But the problem with the Woodsman was that... when all the levels were raised for camera, it got rid of some of the warmth that happens when the bulbs are really low.
Oh.
So that was one of the sort of battles, you could say, I had to take on with the PBS folks and really explain. I sort of fought some battles with their lighting people to just make sure... Of all the things that we're changing, we're going to make sure to preserve that warmth that is there through so much of the show. And it ended up being rather successful.
Yeah, no, yeah. The recording is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a well-produced piece. Yeah. Let's play a game.
Sure.
Let's do it.
Okay, we can talk more about lights.
Yeah?
There's no pun.
No, I know, but I like talking about lights.
I'm twinkling with anticipation.
Oh, no.
No, not so good.
Yeah, that's okay.
No one twinkles with anticipation.
Girl, don't take away my twinkle.
I made up a game called Light It Up.
Okay.
So, yes, it's fun.
Great.
So, I have Lights of Broadway show cards in the middle. These are shows.
Lights of Broadway show cards?
Wait, yeah, so true.
Yeah.
I have a ghost light in here somewhere, too. That would have been fun.
Things are going well.
Except
today.
It wouldn't work for the game. So, no.
Okay.
So, I have shows.
Uh-huh.
From the show deck, pull a show, And then just think of the most iconic number from that show.
Sure.
And then tell me how you would change it with lights.
Great.
Like, cool. Change the, like, direction of that song.
Awesome.
Cool.
So like we're how playing Bobby with one person who actually knows spotlight. How to do this.
Yeah. And Kevin and Brian being like, just don't light it so it's in the dark.
I'm just
going to
see how many times I can say the word gobo.
I was a spot up. Like, I was a spot up for like 2 years. So now I'm in my mind just going, what are all the words I remember? We'll talk about gels and source.
Brian,
force.
You want to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Don't use my word gobo.
I won't.
Pretty sure we might all have to.
Yeah, probably.
Do you guys remember Blue Gobo? It was a website that was like YouTube, but just for Broadway clips.
No.
We used it in college all the time.
I wish I had known. That sounds like
something.
I think
it might still exist. BlueGobo.com.
Wow.
Take a look.
Wow.
Check it out.
Very inside theater. They had like every Tony performance ever. Like.
Okay.
What'd you got?
I pulled Dear Evan Hansen.
Never heard of it.
Okay. So it's this show about a boy who breaks his arm.
That's what it's about?
Yeah. It's about a boy who breaks his arm.
That's it. That's the entirety of the plot.
Yeah, yeah. And he changes his name. He changes his name to Connor, and he writes down his own cast. It's crazy.
Fine. That's all it is.
So I would do Dear Evan Hansen. So I'm going to take. I would say one of the more iconic things about Dear Evan Hansen is its use of technology.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I would light the whole thing by the technology that's in their hands, and as the show moves through it, it gets. The world, because at the end, he's at the end where he's in, spoiler alert, he's in the apple orchard, and he, like, his life transitions from being, like, inside, addicted to his, the technology, into, like, a more well-rounded outside type person.
Ask for a single song.
Yeah, he's giving us a whole plot.
You don't need to do the show.
Yeah, no,
please
no,
don't
no.
tech this whole show while we're here.
thank you, tech. I would essentially do that,
So what, pick one song and tell us how you would specifically do it.
Like waving through a window. He would just have his phone.
Yeah, I mean, I explained that already. They would just have their phones and...
It would just be from their phone.
It would be, like, yeah.
So it's like people carrying around big flashlights that are the shape of phones.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, sure.
Cool.
Okay.
Dig it.
Kevin.
Oh, me. Okay. I'm going to do this one. So I have Bandstand. Ooh. Which was lovely.
I was the associate wedding planner.
Wait, really?
So let's change Jamie's plan. That show was super lovely and was not at all what I expected when I sat down in the theater. I think
Kevin has a lot of expectations of shows that do not go to plan.
That's true. That's true. Not everything is a farce that's like Noises Off.
The funny thing is that's not what you write.
Not at all.
Like, it's not like you think of a musical as a farce.
And
farce.
I just think that's what it is. No, it's like kind of the opposite of what I
yes,
usually
you
write.
You write very sad musicals.
I do, but I assumed that this was going to be a farce, but it was not. So I would say I'm going to do the big song that Laura sings at the end.
Yes. Sure.
And
Welcome Home.
Welcome Home.
Welcome and, Home reprise.
Yes.
Well, yes. Welcome Home reprise.
Thank you.
With the real words.
I think that I would change the lighting by, she would only be lit by cameras going off, taking her picture, like almost like paparazzi. No, but this is like, so you see like the flashing lights of like, as she's singing, it's kind of like jarring her as she's singing the song. And then as the song gets more and more like, I mean, it kind of got violent in the way that she got very like angrily passionate.
Yeah.
And so, like, as that starts happening, the flashes happen but last longer until, like, by the end of the song, it's just, like, giant floodlights, like, hitting her, like, right in the face. So it's just kind of like the world is, like, slowly realizing how screwed up everything was. So that's what I would do to change that. No offense.
All good.
I wonder how many on here you've actually been involved in, too.
He's like, that won't work, but that's fine, Kevin.
This is interesting.
Trusting a lot of actors with lighting instruments is what
you're
doing.
It's also probably really fun to hear a bunch of people talk about what you do professionally and not know what they're talking about at all.
This is an interesting.
You're like, no, but that's what non-lighting designers think they do.
Do whatever you want.
Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes.
What could you even do with lighting in that one?
It would be incredible. I've never done the show. I'd love to do the show, though. I think I would find ways to possibly use colored gobos so that every
Kevin,
sort
you didn't
of
use your word.
Every
I
sort
know.
Of every every
I
sort
don't really
of
know what a gobo is.
Time.
Is the gobo the thing that you put in that like makes it look like there's trees in
yes,
the light?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And they're not the color thing. What's the color thing called?
Gel.
Gel. Okay.
Yeah. But I would use something that would be like a combination of both so that every light that turns on, there is texture within that is also color. And probably try to do it in a style that is similar to the way his brushstrokes were so that no light is a single solid color but is made up of multiple colors and helping sort of tell that story.
So the rest of this podcast is you just pulling
shows. I'm not even kidding. I would say you're just
how
like,
you would do that.
Ooh. So this game is now called Jamie's Brilliant.
That would also be very, it'd also be really expensive because those colored gobos are very expensive.
Wait, yes, I know.
But yeah.
Just like demand it. Be like, I need this. Yeah. And then they'll just give it to you. That's how it works, right?
Sort of. You know, we have lots of conversations about budgets right. all the time.
I'm sure.
It's fine. I probably can't say too much publicly, but I actually invented something that I have a patent on that is in the works and would be very, very useful at helping create that. So
that's super cool.
So exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Someday I'll come back.
Yeah, when,
when
come
I can
back
actually
and tell us when you can
talk
about
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
To be
so cool.
continued.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Kimberly, your
turn. I was
going
to try to figure out to be continued. That's like a light. We'll shed more light on that later.
Yeah.
There it is.
Well done. Well done.
Oh, God. Okay. I almost put myself out there and had nothing.
Wouldn't be the first time.
That's true.
And it won't be the last time.
Not at all. All right, what you got, Kimberly?
I have Miss Saigon.
Okay.
Specifically the 2017 revival.
Great.
It's in
cool.
parentheses.
Specifically. What are these cards?
Wait,
because
wait, you don't know these cards?
The Lights of Broadway show cards, squigs, draws, and
oh,
card
they're all,
every time
of course
something
they're
opens.
All squigs.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they're like
that's
trading
great.
Cards for Broadway.
That's yeah. great, great, great.
They're awesome.
He just
do
did
you
a
pack?
He just did a great one for our production of Caesar and Cleopatra.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It looks awesome.
They come like this.
Oh my gosh.
But this is specific to the prom.
This is so fun. I and didn't know these were a thing. These
yeah.
are going to be like, these are such great favorite. Gifts for people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stocking
so
stuffers.
Cool. Very cool.
They're perfect.
Yeah.
And they live in my scenery bag. Another great gift for people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bag.
Yes. Now I'm spacing on her name that makes them, but she's a lovely, she's a lovely person.
She's so cool. I have Oklahoma in my hands.
That's great.
But in the other hand, that about the game, I have Miss Saigon.
Miss Saigon.
Right.
And now all I can think about is like lighting it with the things they have in their hands. Cause
what like, a brilliant idea!
I was like, she doesn't really hold anything, so I'm gonna do the American Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And literally in my head, because of you two, I'm like, and it's only lit by the car headlights.
Wait, that sounds
That'd
great.
That'd be so fun.
That would be super fun.
And it's just like almost like they're in a. So you change the set for just the American
Dream.
Oh,
she's
Dream.
Doing all the designing.
Well, it's lights.
Right.
Because you just, all of the lights are down so that they are in pairs of two. So it almost looks like they're either on a highway or in a garage.
Got it.
Okay.
Like one of those like parking lots here where the cars go on the
yes.
elevator all the way to the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like they're being chased on a highway.
Cool.
Down
by
their American
dream.
Oh. Yeah. And then at the end, you finally see an act. So it's sort of like alluding to cars in a highway. And then at the end, he drives in the actual car.
Cool.
Of the American Dream.
Jamie, you have to do
That's
another
all.
One.
Yeah, you have to do one more.
Oh, my.
Sorry.
Again.
We believe in you.
You know what makes these all so challenging to talk about is that
they're all very good.
They're all so good.
I know.
You know, it's like, I heard something, I mean, it's been years since I saw Wicked, and there's a Wicked card here, and I heard something recently that I don't even know if it's true or not, but it sounds like the coolest thing ever, and I really want to go back to see the show to see if it's true, that
Kevin saw like a week ago.
I did, I saw like 2 weeks ago.
As she like moves through the template, like act two version of Alphaba when things are a little
in the
like
good dress.
rougher
mm-hmm.
on her.
Elfie in the good dress?
Yeah.
As she moves through the stage of like leaf gobos that are very soft, but wherever she is, they like go focus really sharply to like signify like her
power.
Sort of power at that point.
Whoa.
And I'm like, it's just amazing stuff like that
yeah.
you're
wow.
getting at that upper echelon of theater.
Cool.
You know, the funny thing about I always Broadway and you know, because I work at non-for-profits and I work on a commercial level. I'd mm-hmm. say most of my work is actually commercial off-Broadway. But Broadway is this weird thing where it is sort of like capitalism at its best. And because at the end of the day, it's not necessarily always about the art. It is about making money. Mm-hmm. But you also get the best people at those levels, which is why it's any of these are so hard to talk about, because what would you change? They're all so lovely and great.
But also pick one.
Okay. Okay.
That's really sweet, but do it.
Let me go with West Side Story. How would I light?
Lots of people have touched
a
that.
A production. Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's a great. How would I light a production
that
of West
Side Story?
Or even like a specific number.
A lot of people have touched that card.
That card. Yeah. Very, yeah, very, very
actually
card.
Truthful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, let's pick me. Somebody pick a number for me.
6.
What? Oh God.
I was like,
the dance at the gym. I mean, the dance at the gym. All right. I don't know if this is like a direct design idea, but I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
I always note in my scripts whenever there is a moment where a boy and a girl meet for the first time. I write in my script, dance at the gym like you. As a reference.
I just literally got goosebumps.
Because it doesn't matter the show. It's like, that's what your mind goes back to. Mm-hmm. Them locking eyes for the first time. And like, that is a moment, both in terms of storytelling for the characters, musical, reacting musically. I mean, like, that is the cue in that number is drawing the audience emotionally along into that moment. And then you also see it reflected in so many other shows.
Just you talking about this, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
I would say that's not a full design idea, but at least the moment that it stands out in that number,
and
lighting is
that,
the key.
I've seen that show at high schools. I've seen it like at the top
always
of this game. And there's
like
always
you.
A beautiful moment that like you said, like ushers the audience into like that moment of this is love. Like it's like
this is love.
It's like the visual cue of like love at first sight.
Yeah.
Would you say that is one of the can we think of a more iconic lighting cue in a musical or a stage play that is like you said you can write that down and everyone knows exactly what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. Oh man,
nerdy ones that theater people know.
Like what? Yeah, let's throw them out there.
When Bobby steps into the spotlight at the end of Being Alive in the revival of Company.
Sure.
It's my favorite lighting moment ever.
That's my favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
When Ralph Sparza does his turn doing the "I'm ready," and he just like sings it to the back wall, and it's like banging you in the face because it's amazing.
Oh, this is one of those questions that like so many are going to come to mind after I leave.
Right.
But it's like, all right, you know, you just always have to do Full Monty with that.
Oh yeah.
Final
that's a good
moment.
One.
How do you not do it that way? Yeah.
Yes.
And did you guys do the Full Monty?
Yes.
And they delayed the light cue so that everyone could see.
Yes. For like a half second, and then the light came out.
All credit to
doing the Full Monty.
All these original designers that. And creative teams that built these moments that now are sort of
that's a really good
iconic
iconic
that's like the poster, like when you think of the Full Monty, you think of the lights.
Absolutely, that's a really good one.
Glory Days had cool lights because they had stadium lights.
When I think of iconic shows,
and you're me, you think of Glory.
And I think everyone knows, you know, whether it's because they've seen it here or on the road or the Tony performance, like everybody knows the end of Defying Gravity.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, that look.
And
that
that's a lot of
look.
Light trickery too, because you can't see how she's flying.
Yes.
So like there's a lot of lights on her, but none of them are showing
that's
any of the drapes.
I might even say for people who got the chance to see the King Kong production that just was on the Broadway, the first introduction of Kong.
Oh, it was like in the dark. It's
and
very
it was in
spooky.
The dark, and like they were like lighting her hanging in the air, but like that first moment that you see a glimpse of him and it's like the face before he fully steps into the light, like that was masterful how they did that. Like because there was a giant puppet on stage, but like the way that it was lit, it felt so organic how he entered the space.
Yeah.
That was a good game, Kimberly. Yeah. Light
good
it
job.
Up.
Thank you.
It was called Light It
oh,
Up.
Oh, there's also, well, there's just mention of lights in Pippin at the end. Like the end of Pippin where they ask for, oh, and in prom too. In the prom where she asks for softer lighting in the middle of her song.
Okay. Oh, and is it at all productions of Gypsy when she finishes Rose's turn that like her name is lit up really big
I
behind
think most
her?
Of them. I think a lot of them, yeah.
I feel like that's like a big lighting thing as well.
Is that more set? Well, the lights are controlling the lights, but the set made the R and the O.
And the S and the E.
No. I made those myself. No, at the end of Pippin, where maybe it was just the tour that I saw in like 2006, but the leading player at the end, when like he realizes that Pippin's not going to go with them, he made it a big deal early in the show to give Pippin a pink light to make him look better. And then at the end, he just goes, take away that pink.
Oh.
To the spot up.
That's really
cool. Is
that
just a production that I saw?
Maybe.
It's the only production I've seen, so I don't know.
I've never seen a production of Pippin.
Oh, I love Pippin.
I think Entrance to Nevada, Crazy for You. Those girls being silhouetted.
That's a good one.
Also great. Here's a fun lighting question.
Sure.
From my time as a spotlight operator at Surflight Theater.
Surflight? Wow.
So when I was an intern at Surflight, my crew duties were lighting.
Yeah.
And so during all of the changeovers, I was like either up on the ladder, which was, I was 21 years old and hungover. I don't know why someone decided
to
I
put
should
you on a ladder.
The 5'2" girl is the one on the ladder focusing all the lights. Or my job was just standing on the stage with my hand at varying levels to be how tall the actors are.
Great.
Or just cutting gels.
Lighting that's best.
Yeah. We had great lighting designers.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I was
we did.
A spot op. And then I remember doing Drowsy Chaperone, and I was spot one, and there was a second spot. And during one of the numbers, that spotlight was just on the back wall, not on the person it was supposed to be covering at all. For the entirety of the Man in Chairs monologue, it just looked like maybe there was a sunset in the back, on the back wall. And the Man in Chair was just, you could see him, but not well. And then someone finally was like, kicked her and like woke her up to do the spotlight. Yeah. So any good fails?
Oh, me fail?
Yeah.
Or like lighting
not
fails?
Not you, but just like.
How shows. Do you fail?
How do I fail all the time. I mean, I think I fail all the time. There's because you gotta try stuff to know what works and what doesn't work. I mean, the other day I just put into a show the silliest moment and I was like, I'm going to put this in for one show and I'm going to cut it because it's like, just like, let's have this star drop pop on to absolute blinding brightness and recede to its normal level on this guitar strum. And then it got a plot. It got like a, oh, I guess I can't cut that now.
You gave the people what they wanted.
Which is like,
how often does a light get a plot?
It was like, I was still going to cut it. And then the actors all came up to me afterwards and was like, that was so cool. And I was like,
you're
oh
like,
no.
Okay. What have I done?
So did you
cut
it?
No, I didn't. I left it. I failed a number of times trying things, trying moments and trying to make a moment feel like something and, oh, that's not the direction and taking it another direction. I mean, it's why it's one of the reasons it's so important to do these shows out of town and workshop things. And it's why I think we've been so successful with Midnight at the Never Get is because we've gotten to incrementally step up that piece and step up the production value of that piece. And I'd failed in many moments of that show in its early, early stages. And got to really learn and grow with that whole creative team, like what this show is.
Yeah, I wanted to definitely bring up that show because I got the chance to see it and it was a fantastic production, like across the board. Like the direction was beautiful, performances are beautiful, and your lighting 100% told a giant part of that story. For those of you who didn't get a chance to see it,
tell me about it, please.
Or didn't like get the whole experience, I don't want to give like a whole lot away, but it is the story of a man who is a gay man who is, he had lived his life as a performer doing like cabaret performances of a sort at a place called The Never Get. He had like the midnight show.
Cool.
And,
midnight.
What this, and what
my favorite joke in the show is, that's like calling Fiddler on the Roof 9:30 at the Imperial.
Yeah. Totally. I saw it at the York, I think, is when, yeah, when I saw it. Yeah. And so this man, he's doing like his act, but he's also kind of talking about his life.
Cool.
And through the story...
Is it a one-man show?
No. I mean, it's... It is a original musical in the style of a cabaret act.
Cool.
Okay.
And there is also a twist.
Yeah, there's like a big twist about like you find out that like what you think you're watching isn't actually what you're watching.
It's really a two-person show.
I told you about this because when the twist happened, the entire audience gasped, and then it starts to sit in your chest what the twist was and what happened, and then like you're just kind of like weeping because it's just like everything that you saw is seen completely in a new light during like the last like 15 or so minutes that you know what's happened.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no. It was very attuned to what I've like, this wasn't really a twist because you know the story, but like the way that Hadestown pulls you in so much that you almost believe like they're going to get out. And then that like moment when you realize that like, no, this is like, and then the rest of the show, you're just like, oh God, like it's that kind of feeling. It's so beautiful.
Falls to the floor as she does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was not, and this was definitely not a fail for you because you got a big old nomination for that one.
I did. I got a Drama Desk nomination, which was very, very, exciting. But it was failing at certain things, small things, not big things, out of town. When we did it at Nymph, and when we did it in Provincetown, and incrementally little things that it's going, oh, the next time I get to do this show, I'm going to change that, which was what I think, I speak for myself, certainly, but I think even other departments on that show, too, where if we hadn't had those opportunities to fail and to make corrections, we wouldn't have gotten to where we are with that show right now. It's going to have another life, and it was very nice to receive the Drama Desk nomination for that. It was also cool to receive the Drama Desk nomination with friends of mine.
Sure.
You know, we all lost to Hadestown, which amazing lighting.
That's a decent one to lose.
Yeah,
to.
And they dance with the lights.
To be nominated with Adam, my friend Adam Monterey, and my friend Barbara Samuels, and to see a sort of up and coming generation getting that notice was very, very exciting.
Now, if Midnight came back, do you think you would do it in Tuesdays in the Corner with Kevin?
That was an intense transition. So, Jamie, welcome to Kevin's Corner,
Okay. Where
I have three highly researched questions for you. I started out by typing your first name into Wikipedia and then seeing what came up of Jamie's.
Anything.
Not of Jamie, of yous per se, but there are lots of Jamie's in Wikipedia.
Yes, I'm sure.
And Jamie's then over. I went down weird rabbit holes after that. So we'll see what we come up with.
Okay, great.
So question one. Your name is Jamie. Just like Jamie Lynn Marie Spears, an American singer and actress. She was born in Waco, Mississippi and raised in Louisiana. She is the younger sister of singer Britney Spears and is known for her role as Zoe Brooks on the Nickelodeon teen comedy Zoe 101.
Oh, yeah.
In which she starred from 2005 to 2008. In 2019, Netflix announced that Spears has been cast as a series regular in the upcoming romance drama series Sweet Magnolias. The Shanghai Magnolia Stage Performance Awards, commonly known as the Magnolia Stage Awards, are presented by Shanghai Media Group, Shanghai Theater Arts Journal Publisher, Shanghai Federation of Literary and Art Circles, Shanghai Performing Company, and Shanghai Cultural Federation of Literary... I read that one already. Shanghai Cultural Development Foundation each year. The award recognizes excellence in drama, dance, musicals, and Chinese operas performed in the city of Shanghai, China. Now, China, born Joan Marie Lauer, was an American professional wrestler, glamour model, pornographic film actress, and bodybuilder. China first rose to prominence in the World Wrestling Federation, the WWF, now called the WWE, in 1997, where she was billed as the ninth wonder of the world, since Andre the Giant had already been billed as the eighth. A founding member of the stable D-Generation X, as the promotion's first female enforcer, she held the WWF Intercontinental Championship, the only female performer ever to do so, twice, and the WWF Women's Championship once. So my question is, what is one food that other people love that you totally hate, and why?
Tomatoes.
Really?
Yes. I'm going to get super, super basic with the answer. I cannot stand tomatoes. I love things that are made out of tomatoes.
Like tomato sauce and
stuff like that. Yeah, as long as it's not like chunky. And I think it's a texture thing, and it's really the only food I can think of, because I'm a very adventurous eater. And it's kind of the only thing that I have never been able to
accept.
If
like somebody serves you like a sandwich at a restaurant and there's tomatoes on it.
I'll take it off. Yeah.
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 What about a cherry tomato?
Yeah, no.
Tomatoes are just a big no.
Yeah.
I love tomatoes.
I love that.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. You're
okay,
good.
Great.
Question two. Your name is Jamie, just like Jamie Christopher Hewlett, an English comic creator, animator, designer, and artist, best known as the co-creator and of the comic book Tank Girl. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
And I just look at the nerd in the room. I'm like, do you know what that is, nerd?
Yes.
And the virtual band Gorillaz.
Oh.
Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know what that is. Gorillaz in the Mist is the title of the May 22nd, 2011 episode of American Dad, in which Steve and Stan begin acting more like friends than father and son, which turns into a disaster when Steve ends up cutting school to go to the zoo, and Roger the alien marries an abusive white trash woman so that he can experience the pain and heartbreak found in country songs. Songs for the Deaf is the third studio album by American rock band Queens of the Stone Age, released on the August 27, 2002 by Interscope Records. The album features Foo Fighters and former Nirvana member Dave Grohl on drums, and was also the last studio album to feature Nick Olivieri on bass. So my question is, what's your favorite board game you've ever played, and why?
Oh boy, favorite board game. There's so many that stand out.
That's a good question. That's really hard.
I just have really fond memories of this one summer stock I've worked at, and we'd play this game called Munchkin.
Yes!
And it would get nuts.
It's always funny when like you sit down to play a board game with people and it's like as if you're like having a wild party, like people are so into it.
It would nuts. Get,
yeah, that's what Munchkin
we'd
is.
We'd play Munchkin and it would get
is
crazy.
This like a celebrity-esque kind of game?
No, it's a card game that Jay has promised to teach me how to play because I've heard so many stories.
Yeah, and
of
like,
him
well,
playing Munchkin.
We'd all be like drinking after tech, obviously, and it would, and we'd have like, I mean, just like cross and ages or like very young interns there, and then like me and the rest of the staff. So, shout out to Jeremy and Zach from the Sharon Playhouse when things were getting nuts.
Do you have a favorite one? I feel like you played a lot with your family. Yeah?
I did play a lot. We had a game that we played all the time called Balderdash.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is like where you have a word you've never heard of, and then everybody in the room makes up a fake definition, and then you try to figure out what's the real one, and if people vote for yours, you get points. And we used to, my brother and I would try to write the dirtiest things we could write, and my mom would be mad for like the first like 30 minutes of the game, and then like enough wine would kick in where she started to think it was funny too.
Yeah.
And then it just got like really raunchy, but like just really funny, stupid things, and it was super fun.
Kimberly, do you have one?
Ticket to Ride.
I love Ticket to Ride.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a great game.
I think I've only played it once. One
it's
of my
so
other
good.
Designer friends is always trying to get me to download the app to play.
There's
oh,
an
I,
app?
I have it on my iPad. Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
I don't know if I can do that. I tried to play Monopoly on an app once.
Didn't work for you?
No.
Hmm.
Brian?
I love Clue.
Clue is a good game. It's a solid choice. Did you ever play 13 Dead End Drive?
No.
No, it's not.
It was like Clue, but there were like 13 people in a house, and you're like whoever can escape is the one who gets away with the money of this old lady who died. But it's like,
oh my God.
You're also trying to move people towards spots where like it's like they get killed, so they like by mistake get run over by something or get like knocked
out.
Out of your competition. And there's like a frame on the wall that's like a picture frame, and you can only exit and get out if your picture is the one chosen. But like if you roll doubles, you get to switch the picture, so then you can try to get. It's really fun.
Cool.
I'm also remembering how much I loved Cranium as a child.
Cranium was great.
It was one of those games like Mousetrap that took like 45 minutes to set
love
up.
Mousetrap.
So as soon as you set it up, you're like, do you still want to play this game?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say this too. I also love chess. Both the board game
and the music.
When you play chess, do you light it special?
No. If you go onto my Instagram, there might be one interesting lit chessboard.
Perfect. All right, question three. This one's really smart.
You basically play like reverse Wikipedia game.
Yes.
Against yourself.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay.
Your name is Jamie, just like the title character, and everybody's talking about Jamie.
Oh, man. I was in London right before that.
Oh, you
that,
didn't get to see it?
I didn't get to see it, but it was like everyone was talking about everyone's talking about Jamie.
Yeah.
And everyone was making jokes about it. I mean, it's also based in absolute fact.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I used to always get just people coming up to me and be like, Jamie is over and Jamie is gone. Mm-hmm. And now I get, so everyone's talking about Jamie. And I'm like,
that was an interesting transition.
That was an interesting, in 2 years to see a trend change.
Yeah.
Do you not get any, I hate Uncle Jamie's?
No.
From Love Actually.
I don't.
Really?
And I love that moment. Yeah. I love that moment. That's the Colin
yes.
character,
yes.
right?
Home.
And he leaves again.
Yeah, I, kids.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know what? That one, no one has ever, maybe if I had nieces or nephews, they would be more inclined.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
we can say it to you
if you'd like. No, but yeah. I asked my British friend if that was ever going to come here, and he's like, I don't, because he saw it when he was there,
yeah.
went home to London to visit, he said it was incredible, but he said that it's so inherently British.
I heard it's even, if you're an American over there, it's even hard for you to understand.
Yeah, he was like, you won't get the jokes, you won't get the, like, any of that.
But I was actually, with just how crazy the buzz was, and how much like, people constantly are saying to me, everyone's talking about Jamie, like, I'm shocked it hasn't moved.
But, yeah, agreed.
Even somewhere small, like, yeah. people who might get it.
So the musical is actually inspired by a 2011 television documentary, yeah. Jamie, Drag Queen at 16, that follows the eponymous teenager at 16 years old as he overcomes prejudice, beats the bullies, and steps out of the darkness to become a drag queen. Mm-hmm. In the United Kingdom and some Commonwealth countries, a queen's counsel during the reign of a queen is a lawyer, usually a barrister or advocate, who is appointed by the monarch or the country to be one of Her Majesty's counsel learned in the law. The law and literature movement focuses on the interdisciplinary connection between law and literature. This field has roots in two major developments in the intellectual history of law. First, the growing doubt about whether law in isolation is a source of value and meaning, or whether it must be plugged into a large cultural or philosophical or social science context to give it value and meaning. And second, the growing focus on the mutability of meaning in all texts, whether legal or literary. Those who work in the field stress one or the other of two complementary perspectives. Law and literature, understanding enduring issues as they are explored in great literary contexts, and law as literature, understanding legal texts by reference to methods of literary interpretation, analysis, and critique. That didn't make any sense as I read it out loud. I hope it made sense to you guys.
It did
so
not.
So my question
I don't
is...
know. We're still in Kevin's corner?
If you
Brian is doodling.
If you suddenly were transported to a magical fantasy world with mythical creatures, what magical or mythical creature would you want to keep as a pet, and why?
Mm. Ooh, that's a wonderful question.
Just doing my job.
I think
that really tickled you.
Yeah, that really put a twinkle in. What'd you say?
I don't remember. It was something awful.
I think a centaur, because it's like form and function, right? Like you can ride it. It's utilitarian to get around, but it's also like it could be your best friend.
Yeah.
You can have real human conversations.
And you don't feel weird that you're like talking to a horse that's not going to talk back?
Yeah.
Like, he's a horseman, so he will talk back.
Yeah. Oh. It's like,
and read the stars for you.
We got to like get somewhere, buddy. Let's go.
And read the stars for you?
Centaurs are very connected to like astrology and all that. Did you not read Harry Potter?
Yeah, but I don't remember that part.
What is it? Charon?
Yeah, I forget the names, but they're the ones in the woods.
Yeah, and they like read in the stars
forest.
What's going to happen, and they're
the
like, "We
forest.
Aren't playing with your game, wizards, because this is all going to go down, and we're not here for it."
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because he teaches there for a year. I think he teaches star stuff.
In one of the years.
I don't think the class
star
is called
stuff?
Star stuff, but
no,
he
no.
teaches.
It was.
And this has been Kevin's Corner.
Yay. So you have some projects lined up.
Sure do.
Emoji Land?
Emoji Land. Emoji Land is the next big one for me. It's rather exciting because, again, another show that started at Nymph. I've been attached to this show for a really long time. I knew Keith Harrison when we worked on a little musical downtown together called One Day the Musical, which was one of those sort of amazing experiences because we all just had, like, the best possible time.
Mm-hmm. But only for one day.
And then shortly after that, Keith and his wife Laura started writing Emoji Land, and it's gone through a lot of changes over the years, but I have been really lucky to have been one of the people that was sort of invited into their process really, really early on. Mm-hmm. Years later, we brought it to Nymph and had a great production there, and it's about to embark on an off-Broadway run at the Duke.
Cool.
It's fun because a lot of technology being used, like so many other sort of contemporary musicals right now. But here, with our use of technology in the show, it's so directly tied to the characters and mm-hmm. what they are and what they are within our lives.
Cool.
It's a fun show because what are emojis, right? Except for they're simply these, like, very literally and literally and metaphorically, they are pieces of our culture broken down into two-dimensional forms. Mm-hmm. And we, I think, as artists of the theater, often like to make fun or criticize when there is a lack of depth and a lack of three-dimensionality to writing or to characters. But all of a sudden, you center your story around these characters that are inherently two-dimensional and inherently stereotypes. And with that, there's a huge amount of power because now we can unapologetically hold a mirror up to our own culture and have these stereotypes and two-dimensional characters behaving in certain ways that really reflect back at us about who we are and the state of our current world and culture. Mm. And
that's so fascinating. I would never think about it that way.
Yeah, and I think what we're really creating a world. We're really building a world.
Or a land.
A land. We're building a land that... a land inside of a phone that goes on forever. That is where these characters that play these weird roles in our lives.
And that gives you so many cool, like, yeah, possibilities to go with.
So many different gobos.
Gobos, yeah. All the gobos.
He's going to gobo there.
Yeah. So between, you know, the whole design team, but, you know, me and Lisa Rankle, our projection and video designer, really exciting stuff happening over there, and amazing, amazing cast with Josh and Leslie and some other wonderful folks, and it's going to be a great one.
That's so exciting.
It's going to be a great one. It's great. Another one that we've been able to build over time and know what story we are all trying to tell. We're all on the same mm-hmm. team right now, which is
That's
great.
So great.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, that brings us to the end of our episode.
It does. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining
us. So fascinating. This is ridiculous.
You. Thank you for
our
the
first lighting designer. We made it. Do we ask you a good question? Should we have asked you anything else?
I think so. I think it was great.
What is light? How does refractions work?
I learned that magenta isn't real recently. It's a figment of our imagination.
Go on.
Okay. Color?
Yeah, it's not
or
real.
Or the character Rocky Horror.
Find magenta.
There's the visual spectrum of light. Your eyes are picking up three different signals from, you've got cones in your eyes that are picking up red, green, and blue. And the wavelengths in between those, because it's a bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to see, yellow, it's between green and red, and that actually exists. So your red cones and your green cones are picking up those signals, and but that is an actual thing that exists. The problem is there's nothing but the thing centered between red and blue is green, and it's like, well, what that's not how our eyes work.
Right.
And it's because when red and blue cones pick up light at the same time, it doesn't default to green. It defaults to an imaginary color, which is magenta. It is your brain literally making up a color.
Wait, so is purple not real?
It's not real.
Ooh, this is nuts.
So purple can't be my favorite color anymore?
It's real in your mind.
Wait, so this
the limit does not exist?
So then why
so
does
this
that...
This pen isn't purple?
It's your blue cones and your red cones are picking up light.
Is this why sometimes I argue with my husband about whether something is blue or purple?
No.
No?
You might be a tetra... I'm getting the word wrong. There's some women that have four cones and can see a little bit more in depth in certain areas of the spectrum.
So that's why people thought dress was gold and some thought it was blue. It's all about the cones.
It's all about cones.
That's so weird.
I don't know what that...
Right. It's a whole thing. But Jay and I fight about colors all the time.
You might be the tetra...
Hedron. I am a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jay sees blue, I see purple all the time.
That's nuts.
You're a tesseract. That's what you are.
So you can follow Jamie at J-A-R-L-D on social media.
Jamie Alden Roderick Lighting Design. That's where that comes from.
Oh, Jarald.
I never knew it. I literally always read it as Jarald, and I was like, I don't know why he
did
that.
His name isn't Gerald.
I should probably update that.
No, it's great.
Yeah. Branding at this point. You gotta keep it.
Yeah. You can follow us at Broadwasted.
Hey, that's us.
On Twitter and Instagram. Join our Facebook group.
Do it.
Please go to our Patreon. Check it out. That is at patreon.com/broadwasted. You can also find us at the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yeah, do it. There's some really cool podcasts. A lot of really great content is there.
Josh Lehman of Emoji Land.
Yeah. So check it out. It's broadwaypodcastnetwork.com. Or for those of you that don't like typing a lot of letters, just type bpn.fm/broadwasted.
And don't forget that you can find us also on iTunes. Rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
And thank you.
Of course. But we end every episode with a quote.
We do.
Yeah, yeah.
And today's quote is, I hate Uncle Jamie. Very, very well done.
Wait, did you have that written down?
No. When he said no one uses it, I wrote it down. My original quote was, curtain up, light the lights. We've got nothing to hit but the heights.
Cute.
But I liked your first quote. You did good.
Yeah, thank you.
The first quote, that was
thank you
one.
So much.
Yes.
If you ever see his name on a playbill of any sort, we're so happy that you were there and, you know, take
notice
of the light.
And you'll be surprised. He works on a ton of stuff, so, like, you'll see his name a lot.
And I'd love to give one quick plug. For any of you young adult listeners or parents with young adult kids, my mom wrote a book called Theater Ghost, inspired by the mythology surrounding the ghost light. And you can find it on both Amazon and Audible.
Oh, that's
Theater
so
ghost.
Cool.
Yes.
I love that.
But I actually will find that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love ghost stories. Here we go.
There you go.
Doesn't love theater. Only ghost stories.
That's implied.
But we end every episode, we raise our glasses, and we say,
Zootuwop bump.
Cheers.
Wait, how would you light our Zootuwop bump?
Oh, I would, see, if depending on what the arrangement is.
Sure.
And if it's like going to be a super poppy band, mm-hmm. like backing
that
it.
Tracks with us.
I would hit, like, I would probably have a light cue on, like, every Zoop and Bop. Like every single one.
Yes, please.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.